Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. It's nice to be here with you and an early morning for one time. And I'd like to welcome all our listeners to the next chapter with Charlie, where we dissect the strategies and tactics used by successful people to make life changes necessary for their meaningful next chapter. Today, we are really honored. We have with us from Sardinia, Italy, Elena Perella, founder of Sentidu, that's S-E-N-T-I-D-U, which is an original life coaching process that she developed after years of study and personal experience. Elena says that since she was a child, she has been very sensitive to other people's suffering, which awakened an interest in human behavior that later became a real passion. She went on to receive a master's degree from the Netherlands in Latin American studies with a focus on literature and cultural anthropology. Her study helped her to better understand the reasons and dynamics that cause people to act as they do, which plays a big role in her job now. Her work in international environments reinforced her natural openness to people from diverse backgrounds and beliefs, and fine-tuned her abilities to understand people's emotions and be receptive to them. Elena then, at that time, decided to move back to Sardinia, Italy, where she went on to further shape her own business, which is called Sentidu Life Coaching, and we will delve into Sentidu, so don't worry about what that word means. And to wrap up this introduction, I'd like to read a little brief description by Elena of her work. And she, quoting Elena, she says, "In creating Sentidu, my life experiences were fundamental because it was from those experiences that I can relate to my clients. I suffered from severe depression, eating disorders, and was also a victim of domestic abuse. By coaching myself through them," and she coached herself, "I changed my life and felt inspired to support other people who are ready and eager to learn about themselves." Well, with that said, let's move on to Elena Perella. Elena, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie.
Hi, Charlie. Hi, Paul. Thank you for having me here.
Oh, it's a delight to have you. So tell me, I looked up, I had never been to Sardinia, so I looked it up and looked at all of the tourist reports of it, and it seems like, I've been to Italy several times, and I've never been to Sardinia, and it just seems like a magnificent place. Is that true?
It is true. It is a very beautiful and very special island, yes. It's one of the few blue zones in the world. The blue zone is an area where the energy can be felt in a very strong way. It's the energy of the magnetic field of the earth, of our planet.
Right. Oh, so it comes from a magnetic sort of a meeting spot or a alignment,
yes,
with magnetics that make this a very strong,
yeah,
energetic place?
Yes, it's an area where the magnetic lines of the magnetic field of the planet move in a different way than they move in other places because of the territorial conditions and the orography of the places. And these lines, in some places here in Sardinia, are very concentrated. And this concentration originates magnetic anomalies, and these anomalies are the reason why these places are energetically very, very powerful. And this energy can be used, and it is used, for positive means, like healing yourself, for example.
Oh, no kidding. So what else is it, healing yourself, and do you find it's a good place for you to do your coaching, your life coaching, with that energy? Does that seem to impact your life coaching at all?
it adds something more. I can do my coaching everywhere in the world, and it works as it works here because I channel my coaching. But having the Sardinian energy as an ally, it's a plus, you know?
Right. Right, that's nice. That's really nice. You know what I'd like to do, Elena, is begin this interview, since you call your coaching Sentidu Life Coaching. I'd like, could you help me with a description of Sentidu, a process that you developed to help people overcome their past and move on to a brilliant future? How did you come up with this process of Sentidu?
I came up with this process during my personal internal renewal. Before I get into that, I would like to make you notice that you didn't mention the present. It is correct that I help people overcome their past, and it is correct that I help them move on to a brilliant future, and I help them to do that by supporting them to align themselves in the present, to align to themselves in the present.
Oh,
so this
like
means that,
that I
help people to step out of the illusion of the present.
Of the illusion of the present.
Right.
And what do you mean by that?
Many of us live in a present of illusions because of the conditioning of a toxic past. Our toxic past influences our present experiences. And I shed a light on that illusion to help people to see the beautiful truth about themselves and their lives, and to see what prevents them from seeing the beautiful truth.
Oh, that's fascinating. So what if I'm understanding this correctly, you're saying our past and then our hopes for the future are interfered with by these misconceptions of the past and future, and so that impacts our daily life seriously.
Yes, it makes us see things as they are not. If we have been hurt in the past, if we carry inside a toxic inheritance, then we don't see things as they are in our present. And this compromises not only our experiences in our present, but also in our future.
Boy, I so agree. I've been doing some work. Well, you know, you never stop working on yourself, do you? I'm 68 years old, and I'm still doing self work, and still trying to understand myself. I think it's a lifelong process. You write of a strong connection between past events and how they impact present activities. Could you elaborate or give me some examples so our listeners and
yes,
I could understand this a little bit more?
Sure. The past events impact our present experiences because they influence in a toxic way the elements that are at the foundation of our behavior. And these elements are the inner child, the archetype or potential, our potential, and the masculine and the feminine elements. So the inner child, I don't know if you heard about the inner child, emotional child.
Of course, of course.
It represents the emotions that we experienced when we were children. And if we inherited emotional toxicity from our parents, or if we have been wounded by the destructive behavior of our parents, relatives, or caregivers, then we grow up with a wounded inner child. And a wounded inner child is the main cause of our suffering, because it sabotages us in order to make us repeat our painful past. And with a wounded inner child, we create our lives from an internal source of pain, the lack of self-love. And the wounded inner child creates a distorted reality because it makes us believe that good is evil and that evil is good, And so we act and react according to that illusion, compromising our experiences. So in this way, past events impact our present experiences.
Boy, I so agree with you. You know, I wrote a blog, I want to say a month or so ago, that said, I think the title of the blog was, Whose Eyes Are You Looking Through? And many of us are looking through the eyes of the wounded child instead of the eyes of the present. And it was explained to me by another guest that I had on the show, Jamie Lerner, who talked about viewing your past through adult eyes instead of the eyes of a child. And if you view your past through your adult eyes now, you know, I found a remarkable change in the way I saw the past. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it makes sense. And the child, well, the inner child becomes a problem when it is wounded, but when it is healthy, then it's one of the elements that are fundamentals for a good life, because when it is healthy, it makes us look at certain experiences that it's only possible through the eyes of a healthy child, of a healthy inner child, so in a very positive way. The problem arises when it is wounded. Yeah.
Do you think we can convert that wounded child to a healthy child, or what do you say? Do you convert it, or do you understand that wounded child from a different perspective? How do you go about dealing with the inner child, with the inner wounded child?
We can heal the inner child. We can heal the inner child in different ways. There are several ways to help it become healthy, and actually it's our responsibility to do it. It's a responsibility that we have toward ourselves, our children, and the community we live in.
Let me tell you one way that I healed my inner child. My listeners have probably heard this a few times, but that I had a childhood that where I was, you know, essentially homeless from 3 to 7 years old. And it wasn't that I didn't have a place to live. I just didn't have a family. I was passed from one family to another family. And that gave me this wounded child feeling that I would not be, that I'm not liked by other families. And after they spend some time with me, they find out who I really am, and they pass me on to another family. So I had my wounded child view of this was that I was abandoned, unappreciated, and rejected, and really of not much worth. What I did is I looked through that through my adult eyes. I understood that those were untruths. These were families that just simply couldn't take care of me because my parents were not in a position to take care of me. And I also learned from that, I learned how to give good first impression. I learned how to get along with people. I learned cooperative and collegiality. There were several things that I learned that have impacted my life today significantly and make me who I am today. But it took, you know, gosh darn near 50 years for me to repair that wounded child. Is that the sort of thing that you're talking about, Elena? Am I sort of on the same track as you?
Yes, it is. You used strategies to heal it. I don't know if you were aware that you were healing your inner child, but your approach was what I call an external approach.
A what approach?
External approach. So you did something, you acted in order to, you acted inside, outside to heal inside. And this helped you, helps your inner child to become healthy.
How do you... Go ahead.
So I was saying there are also internal approaches, internal strategies.
Oh, so what would be the difference between an external approach and an internal approach?
Internal approach is, for example, by sensing your inner child, by visualizing your inner child, and visualizing, for example, what I did was visualizing myself now and myself when I was a child, and create a mother-daughter, father-daughter relationship with my inner child. I used also external approaches, but it was the internal approach worked best for me.
Oh, I see. I see. So it's you're getting clarity on what the issues that the inner child is dealing with, and then that gives you information on how you proceed in your present life.
Yes, by visualizing it, I could see myself nurturing my inner child, taking care of it, giving it what I didn't receive when I was a child, what my parents never gave me.
Oh, and I imagine that's where you're coming into loving your inner child.
Yes.
Can you know to help our listeners and to understand this a bit deeper, is it possible for you to give me an example of what you did with your inner child? And you know, I don't ask you to expose any secrets or anything, but
no, it's actually it's something very beautiful that you can do for yourself. I share it with pleasure. For example, I visualize myself walking with my inner child in a park. Also visualize myself holding my inner child while it was crying and talking to it. And this made me feel such a good energy, such a peace, harmony. It was wonderful. And I knew then that I was helping it healing.
That's wonderful. How did that then impact your present life?
Healing my inner child?
Yes.
In a great way, because healing the inner child means learning to love yourself. And if you love yourself, then you don't need anymore something from the outside to fill the emptiness you have inside. If you love yourself, you have it all. Then from there, you can create a very balanced, fulfilling life from that source of love. And this had an impact on every area of my life, my work, my relationships, even the free time I have for myself.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah, I have often believed, as you, that that the influence on a person's current life has been formed by some toxic emotional baggage that is hard to deal with. So our family of history is so important when it comes to dealing with life in the present. You agree?
I agree. It can help us create, it can help us destroy. And we pass that toxic inheritance onto the future generations.
That's true. Yes, we do. We pass that on to our children.
Yes.
And that just continues to get passed on until we can come to a point that we heal with this. I have so many more questions to ask of you, but right now we need to take a quick break. And
okay.
It will be just 20 seconds or so, and then we'll be back, and I have handful of questions to ask you to continue this, to continue our show. Thanks a lot.
Good.
Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie. Today, we have a very fascinating show with Elena Perella from Sardinia, Italy, who is a life coach and has created a process that's called Sentidu that has to do with healing your past and your future, all in an effort to make sure that you have a positive present life. Now, Elena, when we were talking earlier, you mentioned three factors that influence our present life. You mentioned the wounded child, and then you mentioned the archetype. Can you? I've been doing some work with archetypes, so I'm really curious what you mean by archetype.
There has been written and said a lot about archetypes. I researched that for myself, and what I bring about the archetype is related to my personal experience. Archetype is, as it is known, a kind of, model, pattern,
right,
of behavior.
Right.
What I understood about archetypes, thinking of my personal experience, is that we have a dominant archetype, and this concept is also known, the dominant archetype, and it represents our potential, our purpose in life. And the dominant archetype, and here comes my own finding about archetypes, is a non-energetic element of our soul. Like the inner child is also a non-energetic element. And it manifests itself through our job, through a hobby or any other occupation that aims at producing or creating something or offering a service for our own benefit, our own progress, and that of the community on a local and global scale. And in order to reach excellence, the archetype must be balanced and free of toxic conditioning. Our archetype is actually our mission in life. And it is that particular thing that we can do in an excellent way and for which we have a natural predisposition.
That makes perfect sense. How do you help people discover their archetype?
I can identify it in a person during conversation. I also advise people to observe themselves, to understand what they do, to see what they do in a excellent way, what it flows, or the things that make their heart beat fast. You know, it is something that's you can also discover from your childhood, something that you felt you wanted to do when you were a child. It can be also discovered in exploring the world of your childhood.
Yes, I think some of the most... I've been involved in therapy, personal therapy, for... gosh, close to 30 years now, and I've been working for the last 4 or 5 months with a person on archetypes, and there certainly is a dominating archetype, but You know, everybody, you know, there's lots of different theories out there, but she believes in that we have a power wheel of archetypes and that we have nine archetypes, but there is a dominating archetype. And I want to tell you, as we've gone through four of my archetypes, it has been so enlightening and so helpful to me about why I behave in certain situations in certain ways. And I don't mind saying, you know, just so you get an idea, my archetypes are explorer, romantic, creator, and leader.
Those are all
archetypes that, and it just depends on the situation, but each of those really impacts the way I act and what my needs are today as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found that with your people as well?
Yes, only I have a slightly different conception,
sure,
of archetypes,
sure.
But surely they are very important because they are at the foundation of our behavior. And archetype gives the meaning to your life because it's the reason why you are here. And when you align to your dominant archetype, which can be supported by, I could say, secondary archetypes.
Right.
You can have one, you can have a dominant one, but you can have one and others that are of support. And when you align yourself to it and you help it to unfold it, then you've got it. You know why you are here and you can reach excellence so that you can be satisfied, totally satisfied about what you do in life.
Yes,
but if it is not balanced and if it is intoxicated by past events, then you can also use it to harm. So you have to learn about it and to see its condition.
Exactly.
So you can take measures to help it.
And. How are your what type of measures do you help to understand your archetype, your dominant archetype, and how you can align that with your personal life? What sort of process do you use to help people do that?
To help people to discover their archetype, or
yeah.
To discover it's as I said before, it's you can observe yourself, for example, to see what you are good at and understand if that thing can become an excellence. You can feel inside yourself if it flows, if you do it in a very natural way, as if you don't need to learn from books or from other people. It's more than a talent. It's really something that goes beyond a talent, the archetype.
Yes, it is part of your, it's part of your core being, part of who you are in essence.
Yeah, and I help people also to identify it by recognizing it. I can see in many people what their archetype is, and so I can help also giving indications. So before I say that to them, I help them, I recognize it, and I help them through guidance to discover it by themselves because they have to feel it.
Yeah, and the better we align ourselves with that, the much more content we are and the much more, you know, the American word, the much more productive we are, we can do things that gratify our soul and use the words that I'm fond of saying, contribute to the value of society, that we can be a helpful member of society. And that all comes from understanding ourselves better.
Yes, we can really create a better world. If we heal and balance all these elements, we can create a better world we can even achieve world peace.
Yeah,
we all want that, but we prevent ourselves from achieving peace. Humanity, since it exists, hasn't known a period of global peace until today. It never happens.
Yes, that's so true. You know something, as I was reading more about your work, I discovered the belief that you have in self-love, and that is a healing tool to get us into the state of being that we would like to be in. Now, over the past 3 or 4 months, maybe 5 or 6 months, we've done 3 or 4 podcasts on the need for self-love. It seems to be arising as such an important concept, and I'm a major advocate. I self-love, as I improve my self-love, it really certainly has improved me as a person. And I'd love to hear your opinion on self-love. I know in your explanation you called it the root cause of harm. Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, the lack of self-love is the root cause of harm, because if we don't love ourselves, then we hurt ourselves and others. And I didn't know before what love was, so I searched inside myself, outside myself, and eventually I found a very, how can I say, a definition of love in a book called All About Love, written by Bell Hooks. And she quotes Scott Peck, who wrote in his book, The Road Less Traveled.
Right.
He says that he defines love as the will to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth. And this hit me. So I thought, okay, this is love.
Yeah, that's great. Would you repeat that, because I'm writing it down and I think that's really powerful.
Love is the will to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth.
That is a great definition.
Yes, I agree. But I thought also, I could sense that it wasn't complete. Why? Because we can extend ourselves for this, for the purpose of nurturing our own growth or other people's growth. But if this will comes from a source of pain, from an internal source of pain, then it isn't about love, what we are doing. If it comes from a source of balance and purity, then it is love. Because, you know, in the past I thought that compassion, doing good deeds, behaving good, being nice to people, I thought that this was about love, all these manifestations of love, that was it, you know?
Right.
But I was wrong, because I saw that many good people weren't genuinely happy. And I wasn't also authentically happy when I helped others, when I was nice to people. And this was because I was suffering from a lack of love. So I was doing good deeds to receive the approval of other people, because I needed that,
right,
to feel good about myself, but not because I felt good about myself.
Right, helping other people affirmed your value of yourself.
So if we help other people because we need that, because we need to feel attached to them, because we need validation from others, then we are not doing those good deeds from a source of love. So we are not extending, using our will to extend ourselves for our own benefits and other people's benefits. We do that because we need to feel an emptiness inside, and that's not love. And indeed, the reactions of the environment are not positive in this case. But if we do that, if we extend our will to extend ourselves for our own growth and other people's growth, then that's love. And what we receive is matches exactly what we are giving, constructive, positive reactions.
You write about relearning love and self-love. How do you go about relearning about love? I'm sure you know that everybody listening is understanding and comprehends that we value ourselves too frequently based on the opinions of others, on yes. how they accept us, how they appreciate us, how they respect us. And so then we can feel validated, but we don't feel, as you put, we really don't feel self-love. We don't feel this deep feeling of self-love. How would you go about helping somebody relearn love and self-love?
Helping somebody to relearn. The person should be open to that. This is very important. The openness to see reality inside yourself, to understand the reasons for your behavior.
And is that like the first part of your therapy with them or your coaching with them, is to help them understand where they are currently?
Yes.
Okay, and then after they begin to understand themselves currently, how can someone go about learning to love oneself?
A very important step is taking care of your inner child. Make conscious contact with your inner child. We are always in contact with our inner child, but we don't know that. If we create that conscious contact, then we can take care of it and help it healing. And if you help your inner child healing, then you are working on creating self-love, allowing self-love.
Boy, I so agree. So by being in conscious contact with my inner child, I am accessing my faulty thinking. Is that right? That I'm thinking
right.
about myself. I'm beginning to understand
right.
that, and I'm getting to reframe that in a new position as to who I am today.
Yeah,
and that helps me love myself. And then
yes.
the archetype would fall into there, where I'm helping myself align myself with my archetype, align my inner child with my archetype.
Yeah.
And I'm on to being
more
productive.
They can also, because all these elements influence each other. And if the inner child is wounded, it influences also the development of your archetype. Or you can develop to its fullest your archetype, but if you have a wounded inner child, you won't enjoy your life fully.
How do we, you know, I think I've asked this again, but I really am curious, because I am I am. I think we, as we spoke offline, we are both big fans of Carl Jung, and
yes.
And how do we go back? And Carl Jung is strong into archetypes and into wounded child and that sort of aspect. What kinds of messages? If I have a wounded inner child and I'm viewing things, as my friend Jamie Lerner said, if I'm viewing things, my life, situations in my life through the eyes of my wounded child instead of the eyes of an adult, how do I go about recognizing that and making those changes? Is that just a conscious choice, or do I need a coach? Do I need to take notes? What are some processes that I could use to understand that better?
There are people that can help, people like me. It's also possible through an awakening. Because if you are not awakened, then it's like having a wall in front of you. You don't access. You can't access the conscious contact with yourself, with what you have inside.
Okay.
So the awakening is very important, because after the awakening, you can take steps to become aware of everything that you have inside your soul. You can become aware of the strategies that are the best strategies for you to heal, to develop, to evolve. But if you are not awake, then often people who are not awake don't think of that.
And I think that's most people, don't you think?
Yes, unfortunately.
That is, apart from coaching, which, you know, would be difficult for the people in the United States to coach with you, because I could see how working with you would be really quite beneficial.
I work also using Skype, so I'm coaching people also from other countries. Yes,
we'll have the same
as being here. It's the same.
We'll have to make sure that we have that on the show notes of all the ways to contact you.
Thank you.
But are there any other resources? Tell me, is there one book that you would say that people ought to read that would really inform them on dealing with your wounded child and beginning to love yourself?
Well, the book I can recommend is this one I told you about, of Bell Hooks, All About Love.
All About Love.
Yes, this is a revelation, really. It helps you to shift your focus, to open your mind, and to rethink about love. Yeah.
And can you tell me the author again?
Bell Hooks.
Ben?
No, Bell. B-E-L-L.
Oh, Bell.
Bell Hooks.
H-O-O-K-S?
Yes.
Okay, great. Finally, again, as I understand it, my brief understanding of Sentadu, it's about developing a new perspective on personal behavior. And I truly agree that our perspectives on life are always in process, and I am forever learning how to do better, happier, how to do life better, happier, and more meaningful. I'm curious about your take on Sentadu and this new perspective. How does Sentadu, your process of Sentadu, help people do life better, happier, and more meaningfully?
Sentadu is the Tidu. Capacity.
Okay. Explain Sentadu for me.
Sentadu is the capacity of the soul to see things as they are. And I help people to give their souls this capacity back. So I shed a light on the internal worlds of the person, of the internal source for the behavior, so that they can see the elements that are at the foundation of their behavior. They can see what they inherited from their family, and they can see the strategies that they can use to improve and evolve. And this new take on this new insight on behavior has to do with a new understanding of the soul and the ego in relation to the three energetic components of our human nature: the heart, the mind, and the body, through which we create our concrete reality. I searched and researched a lot about the soul, and I came to the conclusion that our soul is a non-energetic code located in our heart. Our soul is the innate memory of our being, which contains information about our past, present, and future. It contains elements like the inner child or emotional child, the archetype, and the masculine and feminine elements. We talked about this. And it contains also the inheritance of our family, the emotional inheritance of our family. And all these elements give birth to our concrete reality. What happens is the soul, non-energetic code, is energized by the energetic heart. The energetic heart is the magnetic field of our heart. And these fluxes of energy bring the content of our soul up to our mind. In our mind, we have the ego. The ego, and this is also new, is a function of our mind, which transforms all the content that it receives from our soul into thoughts, dreams, ideas, emotions. And all this is then sent to our body. And through our body, this mental content becomes our reality.
And those are energetic elements.
The elements coming from our soul are energized by the energy of the heart.
Oh, okay. Soul is when you say non-energetic, it's just merely factual. It's not driving us to do anything. These are just facts or situations that we have in our life.
It's a code. It's information that we have inside.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a non-energetic code that gets energized by the electromagnetic field of the heart.
I'm writing this down. I shouldn't be writing this down,
okay.
but it's so fascinating that I.
This is why the silence.
Yeah, that's why. That's why I apologize to all our listeners because I'm so fascinated. I'm writing this down because I want to study it myself. And what made you come to that conclusion that the soul is non-energetic? It would seem to me that the past and our dreams of the future are very energetic, but you're saying they are not. They are a code that goes to the heart, and the heart is where the energy lies.
Yes, because that information is exchanged through energy. Yeah, and
yes.
I came to that conclusion because, well, in the past I thought that our soul was our heart, but I was wrong. I thought that it was our mind, and it didn't match reality. I couldn't see that in my concrete reality. I'm a very pragmatic person, so I believe, but I have to see also then that what I believe matches reality. And little by little, by exploring inside myself, I found that code. Not that I can see it, but I can sense it, and I can see the logic that there is in what I'm saying, because the energetic heart exchanges this information of the soul within us, but also outside us. I'm exchanging with you, with Paul, with my neighbors. All that information comes and go, in and out. And this is also how we inherit elements from our family, through that energy, through that those fluxes of energy, through the electromagnetic field of their heart. They come into us and they place themselves in our on our soul.
Is our wounded child, is that energetic or is that a code as well?
It is a code. It's a non-energetic element. It becomes energized because of the energetic heart of the electromagnetic field of the heart. And then it becomes, then in our mind, through the ego, becomes emotions, childhood emotions.
So it's translating. So my heart is translating my wounded child in a given situation that I'm facing, that I'm discomfortable with or uncomfortable with, that my heart then takes this code from my wounded child and energizes that into behaviors that may be appropriate or inappropriate.
It's the ego that gives to the information of the inner child that shape.
Oh, okay. So
yeah, because the content of our soul can be toxic or healthy or non-toxic, healthy, unhealthy. And then it gets the meaning, this information gets the meaning into our mind through the ego. So our mind knows, because of this code that is traveling inside us, what that particular element will become. It will become a destructive thoughts that our body translates into a dysfunctional behavior, for example, if it is toxic.
Boy, Elena, you have enlightened me so much. I'm surprised I've talked this much without being silent and thinking, because I'm a silent thinker. Anytime somebody says something really important, I get silent and I have to ponder it, and it's very difficult on the radio.
Well, that's good, because you listen, understand, assimilate.
Oh, this is amazing, because I have never thought of my wounded child as non-energetic. I thought my wounded child drove me and caused me to do certain actions, and you're saying no,
it does, but not in the form of energy, because it's an element that is energized by the energetic heart. So it is your inner child that causes functional or dysfunctional behavior, but through the energy of the energetic heart and through the ego. You understand?
Yes, I do understand.
So it is the energetic, the inner child, it is the archetype, the feminine and masculine elements that receive, thanks to this energy, becomes little by little reality, first through the ego and then through our body.
This is fascinating. Elena, I could... honestly, I could speak with you for another hour, but
me too.
But,
I know.
but we are out of time.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you so much for reaching out and coming to speak with my listeners. That this is such an enlightening podcast that I'm going to certainly follow up on it.
Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you.
Well, I really appreciate you you being on the podcast. Now I'm going to do a close, but I would ask you to hang on to the line so we can chat after the podcast.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to welcome, or I want to, I say this all the time. I want to welcome. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning into The Next Chapter with Charlie, and be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life, L-I-F-E. And thanks again for listening. Until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.